And it's always a pleasure to be here. And let me also thank the organizers for putting together a fantastic program. So I'd like to talk about some work done together with Matthew Fisher, who is in the audience, and Charlie Kane. And it turns out that this field is so hot right now that there have been three other papers on exactly the same problem, which appeared on archive on exactly the same day, talk about long-range entanglement. So I'll try to explain what all the excitement is all about. All right, so here's a plan. I'll start by reminding you about symmetry-protected topological phases, which form a backdrop for this talk. Then I'll review the properties of probably the most famous such phase, which is the three-dimensional electron topological insulator. And then I'll come to the main subject of my talk, which is topologically ordered surface phase of electron topological insulators. And the word topological appearing there twice is not a typo. And finally, if I have time, I'll talk about some extensions to three-dimensional topological superconductors. All right, so this audience really needs no introduction to symmetry-protected topological phases, and Louis already introduced them on Monday. But just very briefly, these are gap phases protected by a symmetry. And as long as this symmetry is present, one cannot go between the trivial product state and the non-trivial SPT phase without encountering a phase transition. However, if one allows oneself to break the symmetry, one can continuously interpolate between the product state and the SPT phase. So this last fact in particular means that SPT phases have no intrinsic topological order. That is, they have no ground state degeneracy on a torus, no fractional excitations, and no long-range entanglement. So they are very much unlike fractional quantum Hall states or quantum spin liquids. So they look pretty boring from this perspective, but what actually makes them exciting is the presence of very unusual protected edge states. In particular, for a one-dimensional SPT phase, the zero-dimensional boundary is always gapless. For a two-dimensional SPT phase, the one-dimensional edge is either gapless or spontaneously breaks the symmetry. And for a three-dimensional SPT phase, the two-dimensional surface is either gapless, spontaneously breaks the symmetry, or supports intrinsic two-dimensional topological order. So in this last case, we have a three-dimensional SPT phase with no fractionalization in the bulk, only electron excitations in the bulk. But on the surface, we have topological order and fractional anion excitations. And this last option has not been appreciated until quite recently, until the work of Vishwanath and Sental. And this is the option that I'll focus on in my talk today. Now, independent of dimension and which of these options are realized, the properties of an edge of a d-dimensional SPT phase cannot be mimicked in a strictly d minus one dimensional system. In particular, the symmetry on the boundary is realized in an anomalous manner, one which is prohibited in a lower dimension. And Louis already mentioned this on Monday. So as a result, the study of SPT phases and their boundaries yields a lot of insight into realization of symmetry in various dimensions. And that's what makes this field so so interesting and deep. All right, so I'll focus on a particular example of an SPT phase, namely the three-dimensional electron topological insulator, first discovered by Liang Fu, Charlie Kane, and Melle. So this was the first three-dimensional SPT phase discovered. And it's a phase of electrons protected by particle number conservation and time reversal symmetry. And it's crucial that the electrons transform under time reversal as Cramer's doublets, which is the standard transformation law of physical electrons, of course. Now, the convenient thing about these electron topological insulators is that they can be realized already in non-interacting electron systems, just as band insulators. Now, band insulators, first of all, have gapped bulk. Furthermore, they have no fractionalization in the bulk. The only excitations in the bulk are electron and holes. However, if you take this non-interacting electron topological insulator and we look at its surface, we find that the surface supports an odd number of gapless Dirac cones. And this is interesting because we know that strictly in two dimensions, one cannot realize an odd number of Dirac cones while preserving the time reversal symmetry. This, in the field theory literature, this goes under the name of parity anomaly. But one can realize an odd number of Dirac cones on the surface of electron topological insulators. All right. So what partially made this field so hot is that these three-dimensional topological insulators actually exist in nature. They were realized experimentally very quickly after their theoretical prediction. And here are some materials, and one sees beautiful Dirac cones on the surface. All right. Now, if we start with this gapless Dirac cone on the surface, and we break the symmetry, we can gap the Dirac cone out. For instance, we can break the time reversal symmetry by depositing a ferromagnet on the surface. This gaps the Dirac cone out and leads to an insulating gap surface state. But this surface insulator is still a kind of a band insulator. So again, it has no intrinsic topological order. Its only excitations are electrons and holes with integer charge. But what's unusual about this time reversal Brocken surface phase is that it has a electromagnetic response, a Hall conductivity, which is plus or minus a half, depending on how one breaks the time reversal symmetry. So one way to understand this Hall conductivity is that if we create a domain wall on the surface between two regions with opposite breaking of time reversal symmetry, then this domain wall supports a chiral gapless fermion mode, which looks exactly like an edge of a nu equal 1 integer quantum Hall state. So one that can then assign half of the Hall conductance to each one of these regions. All right. So we have something interesting here. We have this surface phase with Hall conductivity 1/2, but with only integer excitations. And actually, strictly in two dimensions, this is impossible. Strictly in two dimensions, Laughlin flux threading argument tells us that if the system has a Hall conductivity sigma xy, it must have excitations with charge equal to sigma xy. But here, we have fractional Hall conductivity, but only integer charged excitations. So again, there is something anomalous about this surface phase. OK. Now, going back to this gapless Dirac cone, instead of breaking the time reversal symmetry, we can decide to break the particle number conservation symmetry while preserving time reversal, for instance, by coating the surface with an S-wave superconductor. Now, again, this gaps out the Dirac cone. So now one has gapped Bogoliubov quasi-particle excitations F. And in addition to this Bogoliubov quasi-particles, the superconducting surface will have vortex excitations. Now, there is something interesting about these vortices. Namely, if you look at pi flux vortices, the minimal vortices, they support Majorana zero modes in their core. And the presence of these Majorana zero modes endows these vortices with non-abelian statistics. Now, there is something strange here, because in two dimensions, we do know of superconductors which support Majorana zero modes in their core. For instance, P plus IP superconductors. But P plus IP superconductors break the time reversal symmetry. Whereas this surface, this superconductor on the surface of the topological insulator doesn't break the time reversal symmetry. So again, there is something anomalous going on. All right. So I've told you about a gapless symmetry preserving termination of the surface. That was the Dirac cone. I've told you about various symmetry broken terminations. But remember, in the beginning of my talk, I told you that one can have a gapped, in general, for a general SPT phase in three dimensions, there is an option that one can have a gapped symmetry respecting surface phase at an expense of the surface supporting topological order, intrinsic topological order. Yes?
In the beginning of your slide, you mentioned the 2D bulk and then 1D age case. And you mentioned that there is also two possibilities. One is there's a gapless age state and also a possibility of spontaneous symmetry breaking.
Yeah.
But I wonder that statement, is that violate is a common Mermin-Wabener theory?
So it depends on the symmetry. So if the symmetry is such that that spontaneous symmetry breaking is allowed in one dimension at zero temperature, so if you have a discrete symmetry, for example, then the edge can break the discrete symmetry. For continuous symmetry, of course, you cannot. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So for the third case, the point is that you can have gapped and symmetry preserving at the expense of having topological order. So symmetry is preserved. All right. And for the particular case of electron topological insulators, it is easy to show that this is really the only remaining option. So here is the argument. Suppose there is some gapped symmetry preserving surface phase of the topological insulator. Let's call it phase X. Now, let's argue that this phase X must be topologically ordered. To do so, let's consider a thick slab of the topological insulator. And then on the top surface of this slab, we will induce phase X. And on the bottom surface, we are going to break time reversal symmetry and realize this phase with Hall conductivity half, which I just mentioned. Now let's view this slab as a two-dimensional system. As a two-dimensional system, its Hall conductivity must come entirely from the bottom surface, because neither the bulk nor the top surface break time reversal symmetry by assumption. So this slab will have a Hall conductivity 1/2. Now, by Laughlin flux threading argument, this slab must have excitations with charge equal to the Hall conductivity, so equal to 1/2. But we know that the bottom surface doesn't support such excitations, and neither does the bulk of the slab. Therefore, the top surface must support excitations with charge 1/2, so the top surface must be topologically ordered. OK. So we've proved that if the surface of the topological insulator is neither gapless nor symmetry broken, it must be topologically ordered. But do such realizations, do such symmetry preserving gapped terminations actually exist? And in the rest of my talk, I will try to convince you that the answer to this question is yes. And I will deduce such a gapped symmetry respecting termination the topological order that it will have will be quite non-trivial. It will be, first of all, non-abelian, and there will be 24 different anion types. And actually, it's convenient to decompose this topological order into two sectors. The first sector is a Mourid sector, and it's exactly like the, in terms of its anion content, it's exactly like the famous Pfaffian fractional quantum Hall state at filling factor 5/2. In particular, it supports charge E over 4 non-abelian anions. And then there's another sector, which is just an abelian sector with a single non-trivial neutral anti-semion excitation. So even though one can conveniently decompose the anion content as this product of two sectors, actually the time reversal symmetry acts very non-trivially in this surface phase, and it mixes the two sectors up. And furthermore, it is easy to show that this type of topological order cannot be realized strictly in two dimensions, preserving both time reversal and particle number symmetries.
So here you're claiming there has to be a non-abelian solid kernel, so it's an abelian one to not exist, or maybe non-abelian works, but maybe some abelian one also works.
Yeah, actually, I don't think you can have an abelian state in this case.
This is not the only possibility.
Okay.
So in the locally fluctuating argument, how would it work? Because you've got to have cap. I mean, you can't have a kind of hole through the ends. It's got to be a solid surface.
Yes, so the Laughlin flux threading argument can only apply to systems which are two-dimensional, right?
Well, yeah, you're taking the slab.
So that's how the surface by itself can evade the Laughlin flux threading argument, because there is always the other surface there. So, but if I take a slab, then it's okay.
There's a boundary, and the, I mean, the part of it, I mean, it should be thicker than this, right? The slab has got one on one side, the other stays on the inside, but there's a part. There's a boundary between two. There's something happening at the junction.
Are you worried about this? The edge of the slab? This edge?
The side?
I don't even have to roll it up into a cylinder, right? I can just make a hole through the bulk. So just through a single plaquette of the lattice, I can thread flux 2 pi. And then that will induce an excitation with that. There will be a Hall effect. Charge will flow in. Right. All right. And before I continue, let me point out that this same topologically ordered surface phase was independently deduced by Wang, Potter, and Sentel. Okay, so I'm going to deduce this surface topologically ordered phase. And I'm going to pursue the following strategy. I will start with the surface superconducting phase, which, remember, is time reversal respecting. And then I will disorder the surface superconductor by proliferating vortices. And turns out that in this case, the smallest vortex that can be proliferated is a quadruple vortex with flux 4 pi. And I'll explain why that is the case. Now, once these vortices proliferate, the particle number symmetry is restored, and one gets an insulating state. And furthermore, this vortex proliferation process preserves the time reversal symmetry. And we will see that the resulting insulating phase is a topologically ordered phase. Okay, but before I can continue with the strategy, we need to understand the properties of the surface superconductor a little bit better. So as I said, the surface superconductor supports vortex excitations with some vorticity k. And if I couple this system to an electromagnetic gauge field, the vortices will bind flux, magnetic flux pi k. Now, if I look at vortices with odd vorticity and I solve the Bogoliubov-Dejean equation, I find that they support a Majorana zero mode in their core, and they will have non-abelian statistics. But if I look at vortices with even vorticity, they have no Majorana zero mode, and they will have abelian statistics. But I'd like to be actually more precise than this. Even for objects which have abelian statistics, I'd like to understand what is the exact Berry phase acquired during an exchange. And here there is an issue, which is that in the absence of an electromagnetic gauge field, vortices have logarithmic interactions. And as a result, the abelian part of the exchange statistics is ill-defined. So to solve this, to evade this problem, let us begin by coupling the system to an electromagnetic gauge field. This gets rid of the logarithmic interactions and allows me to define the abelian part of the exchange statistics. And then at the end of the day, I will switch the electromagnetic gauge field off and talk about system without any long-range interactions. OK. So how do we determine the statistics of these flux tubes, of these vortices? To do this, I will resort to a trick. Again, this is just a convenient trick. The idea is the following. I'm going to consider a slab of the electron topological insulator, a thick slab. And on the top surface, I'm going to induce superconductivity, while on the bottom surface, I'm going to break time reversal symmetry, obtaining this phase with Hall conductivity 1/2. And I'm going to consider vortices on the superconducting surface. These vortices will have a magnetic flux associated with them. And on the superconducting surface, the flux is concentrated in the vortex core. But in the bulk and on the bottom surface, the flux will spread out. And I'll study the motion of such vortices. OK. Now let me remind you that if one has an interface on the surface between a superconducting region and a time reversal broken region, then the interface supports a chiral Majorana mode. But the edge of our slab is precisely such an interface. So the edge of our slab supports a chiral Majorana mode. And the presence of this chiral Majorana mode allows me to identify the slab viewed as a 2D system with a P plus IP superconductor. So the slab viewed as a 2D system is in the same phase as a P plus IP superconductor. But we know what the statistics of vortices in a P plus IP superconductor are. First of all, the statistics of vortices in a two-dimensional system can, the topological sectors can be labeled by flux. And flux 2 pi, strictly in two dimensions, is same as flux 0. So I only need to kind of consider the parity of the vorticity. So excitations with even vorticity will lie in topological sectors 1 or f. And excitations with odd vorticity will lie in the topological sector sigma. So what are the sectors? One is just the identity particle, just the trivial boson. F is the Bogoliubov quasiparticle, which is a fermion. And then sigma is this non-abelian particle. Sigma is the pi flux vortex with the Majorana mode. And two of these pi flux vortices can fuse either in the identity channel or in the fermion channel. So that's the non-abelian nature of them. So this whole kind of statistics and fusion rules is known as the Ising-Anion model. So statistics of vortices in a P plus IP superconductor is simply described by this Ising anyon model. All right.
Max, sorry to ask you this question, but I didn't understand which part of this 2D surface you are taking as a P plus IP superconductor.
So I'm claiming that the entire slab, if I think of it as a 2D system, is a P plus IP superconductor, is in the same phase as a P plus IP superconductor.
So why is that? Sorry, I don't.
So first of all,
how can you take that as a P plus IP
superconductor? So first of all, this slab has no topological order, right? It just and it's a superconductor.
But on top, is it some conventional superconductor?
On top, it's a conventional. But now I would like to think of the entire slab, right? So now, so it's a system with no topological order. So it's a system with no topological order in two dimensions. And you know, if I wanted, I could even take this as a non-interacting system. I could just treat the superconductivity and the magnetism at mean field level. So it will be just some band dispersion. Now all systems. In two dimensions, and you know, let me, you know, to be very simple, let me think about free system. Can be just, you know, there are some number of copies of P plus IP superconductor. This is the classification of fermionic Hamiltonians in two dimensions. Well, how do I determine how many copies of a P plus IP superconductor it is? I just look at what is the central charge of the edge mode. In this case, I know that the central charge of the edge mode is 1/2 because this interface supports a single chiral Majorana mode.
So if I want to take this slab system as a 2D superconductor, then what should I assume for the coherence length? So my coherence length is, say, longer than your slab. What's the length scale assumption here?
So. Very good. So the superconductivity, of course, is concentrated on the top surface.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but that's okay. that as long as my vortices.
You can still define a vortices for the entire slab, even if your
confined to the surface?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you take a superconducting film on top of a silicon substrate, I mean, you can think of it as a two dimensional. So there are two issues. First issue is. So there are two issues. First of all, without the flux, you know, if you don't have an electromagnetic gauge field, and second is if you do have an electromagnetic gauge field. But then, you know, the electromagnetic gauge field, you're correct, is going to spread out in the bulk. I absolutely agree with that, and that's actually crucial to my argument. But if you take the distance between the vortices as being larger than the thickness of the slab, then you're okay.
So the top superconductor helps in creating vortex flux.
Yes. All right. This is the statistics of flux tubes piercing the entire slab. But now, clearly, these statistics are sensitive to the fact that I broke time reversal symmetry on the bottom surface. Because if I look at the topological spin of this pi flux, I see that it's complex. And if I broke time reversal symmetry in an opposite way on the bottom surface, I would get a conjugate statistics for this pi flux. So I'm not really interested in the statistics of the vortices due to the entire slab. I'm really only interested in the part of the statistics which comes from the time reversal invariant top surface. So somehow I'd like to peel off the contribution to the statistics which comes from this time reversal broken bottom surface. And there is a way to do this, peeling off. So on one hand, I know that the statistics of my vortices is described by this Ising anyon theory when they pierce the entire slab. But I can decompose the action for the vortices into contributions from the top surface, from the bulk, and from the bottom surface. Now, during the vortex motion, the bulk and the bottom surface are only affected via the presence of the electromagnetic gauge field, which I denote as A here. And furthermore, the gauge field is smooth in the bulk and on the bottom surface, so I can just consider an effective action for it. Now, the bulk response turns out to be trivial. It doesn't contribute anything to the flux tube statistics. But the bottom surface, the response of the bottom surface of the, to the electromagnetic gauge field is, of course, just this whole conductivity 1/2. So it gives rise to a Chern-Simons term for the electromagnetic gauge field. OK, so now I know this part. I know this part, and I know this part. So I can figure out the action for the top surface.
So this will be the action for the top surface coupled to the gauge field. The gauge field will remain. And yes. You'll remove that too later or something.
I will remove that later. But for now, the gauge field remains. So these vortices are coupled to the gauge field. OK. Right. So I deduce that the action for the top surface is given by this Ising anion theory plus an extra piece. And this extra piece can be conveniently rewritten in terms of vortex currents coupled to a Chern-Simons gauge field little a. So this Chern-Simons gauge field little a should not be confused with the electromagnetic gauge field capital A. And this Chern-Simons gauge field little a is at level minus 1. Is at level minus 8. And what this extra piece does, it adds an extra abelian Barius phase e to the minus pi I over 8 to the cell statistics of the pi fluxes. So it adds some extra abelian phase on top of this Ising anion theory. So the statistics of vortices on this superconducting surface can be described by a product of the Ising theory and U1 level minus 8 abelian Chern-Simons theory. And the charge of the charge under this U1 level minus 8 Chern-Simons field conveniently coincides with the vorticity. And actually, not all anions in this product theory are realized by the vortices. Because remember that that vortices with odd vorticity lie in the sigma sector as far as the Ising theory is concerned. But vortices with even vorticity lie in sectors 1 and f. So some subset of this Ising cross U1 level minus 8 theory is realized by the vortices. And it's actually very reminiscent of the Murid state, which is exactly the same subset, but of Ising cross U1 level plus 8. OK, another interesting observation is that the statistics of vortices are invariant under shifting vorticity by 8, that is, flux by 8 pi. And this is quite different from what happens strictly in two dimensions, where you can always shift by 2 pi without any change to the statistics. So this, again, underlines how anomalous this surface state is. OK. And one can go ahead and one can calculate the topological spins of these vortices. So now we've understood the vortex statistics in all their glorious detail. And we can go on and proceed with our strategy of condensing vortices to get this topologically ordered surface state. OK, so the simplest vortex that one might want to condense is a pi flux vortex. But we don't know how to condense it because it actually has Majorana modes in its core. The next simplest vortex is a flux 2 pi vortex. But again, we don't know how to condense it because it has semionic or anti-semionic statistics. And we don't know how to condense semions. We only know how to condense bosons. So the smallest vortex, which is a boson, is a flux 4 pi vortex, a quadruple vortex. So that object we know how to condense. But it's a little subtle because actually this quadruple vortex has mutual statistics with some of the other vortices. So we know how to condense it, but it's a little complicated. So first, let me begin by doing something simpler, which is condensing a flux 8 pi vortex. A flux 8 pi vortex is a complete vegetable. Remember, statistics is periodic modulo 8 pi. So it's statistically entirely trivial. It's a boson and has trivial mutual statistics with everything else. So it's very simple to condense it. So its condensation will give rise to a gapped insulating state, which will be time reversal invariant. Furthermore, all the vortices with vorticity smaller than 8 survive as electrically neutral anyon excitations of the resulting phase. And they keep whatever statistics they had as vortices in the superconductor. So they, yes?
So
I'm condensing both the flux 8 pi and the minus 8 pi simultaneously.
So
it's exactly like just an ordinary XY transition from a Mott insulator to a superfluid. You can view it coming from the Mott insulating phase, you can view it as condensation of a boson, but coming from the superfluid phase, you can view it as condensation of vortices.
In that case, that's driven by the drag field, which allows a vortex and a vortex pair to the lattice spacing, whatever, to carry momentum, which is a drag vector.
You can think of everything as being commensurate. That's okay. The surface. First of all, we are not. So here we are thinking only about kind of strong topological insulating properties. So we are not really worried about lattice symmetries and so forth, but in principle, I imagine that you can engineer a system such that everything will be at a commensurate filling on the surface. Okay.
That part of the argument is completely fluffy.
Well, so we completely understand this transition. Is described by the XY theory, which we know.
We're worrying about that we don't have a Berry space for the dynamics of the vortex, right? I mean,
exactly.
We can put on a periodic potential
that's
appropriate, that's commensurate with the underlying Cooper pairs. And
that's still vague.
And then hard to do
something. Anyway, yeah. I'm just pointing out that's very vague.
Okay, so let's maybe discuss after the talk. What used to be vortices will become electrically neutral anyon excitations of this topologically ordered state, and in addition to those vortex excitation, the surface will support another kind of excitation, which is a charge 1/4 boson. So to understand the appearance of these other excitations, one can use the following logic. If you start with an insulator and you condense a charge Q object, you get a superconductor whose vortices have flux 2 pi over Q. If you start instead with a superconductor or superfluid and you condense objects with flux phi, the resulting insulating state will have excitations with charge Q equal to 2 pi over phi. So it's kind of a dual. And in this case, we are condensing vortices with flux 8 pi. So this gives rise to the excitations with charge 1/4 in the insulating state. So we have this charge 1/4 bosons. And these charge 1/4 bosons see the vortex descendants as if they really carry the magnetic flux. So this charge 1-quarter boson has mutual statistics with the vortex descendants. And then all the all the non-trivial anionic excitations of this surface state can be obtained by combining some number of these charged 1-quarter bosons with vortex descendants. And overall, this gives rise to 96 distinct anion types. Therefore, we call this topologically ordered state T96. Okay. So in principle, we've achieved our goal. We've deduced a symmetry-preserving gapped surface of an electron topological insulator. The only problem is that this surface state has 96 anions. That's a lot. So the question is, can we reduce the number of anions? And the answer is yes. So remember, this 96 anion state was obtained by condensing the flux 8-pi vortex. Turns out that, remember I told you in the beginning that we can also condense a flux 4-pi vortex. So if one condenses this flux 4-pi vortex, one gets something a little simpler. One gets a state with only 24 anions. And that that state decomposes as a direct product of a Marie state and an anti-semion state. And so this state with 24 anions, we call it T24. So by the way, all these T's remind me of names of Russian tanks. But okay, so there is this Moritz sector with charged non-abelian excitations, and there is this neutral anti-semion sector. So I guess I'm running pretty much out of time. Let me quickly tell you how the edge between this T24 phase on the surface and the time reversal Broken phase on the surface looks. There are interesting edge states. In particular, there are two edge modes that come from the Moritz sector. There is a neutral Majorana mode, F, and there is a charge chiral boson. And these two modes propagate in the same direction. And then there is a neutral bosonic mode coming from the anti-semion sector, which propagates in the opposite direction. So there is some intricate edge structure. Okay, so we've obtained this topologically ordered surface with 24 anions. Can one reduce the number of anions even further? Well, actually, there have been a proposal by the Stanford group and by the by the Station Q / Stanford group and the Berkeley group of another state which has only 12 anions. This one is commonly known as the T-Fafen. And we know that the T-Fafen is a surface of some three-dimensional interacting electron insulator, but we don't know whether it's a surface of the ordinary electron topological insulator. Well, actually, turns out there are several versions of this T-Fafen, and one of them is the surface of the ordinary electron topological insulator, but we don't know which one. So actually, this is very much related to the classification of all interacting electron topological insulators proposed by Wang, Potter, and Sentel, and I think Sentel will talk about this tomorrow. Okay, so at this, I unfortunately don't have time to describe extensions to topological superconductors. But let me conclude by saying that I think this way of thinking about three-dimensional SPT phases in terms of their topologically ordered surface states is a very fruitful viewpoint. And theoretically, there are lots of interesting open questions. But I think the one that really needs to be addressed is what kind of realistic Hamiltonians might realize this this type of topologically ordered surface phase. Thank you very much.
Right, it's time for questions. What about the boundary between the 24 and 96?
No, that boundary can be good. Yeah, essentially, the the 24 state can be obtained from the 96 state by condensing a descendant of the flux 4 pi vortex. And that, because it's just a boson condensation, then the edge is trivial.
So if I have the whole surface of the thing covered by one of these states, something like the 96, 24 things that didn't topological integrity,
yes.
Is that 96 and 24?
Over two. Because this includes the counting I used includes the electron. If you want to identify anions which are related by adding an electron, then you divide by two.
So it would have a 48 or 12 probably.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Do you have an idea of what conditions one should be looking for, you know, where such states could be realized? What ingredients would you need?
So one idea we had, which is very vague at this stage, is that maybe if you put a Josephson junction array on the surface, so in this superconductor, if you pattern it with a Josephson junction array, maybe somehow one can drive this type of transition. There are some lattice.
Why would Josephson junction array
help? Well, maybe you can somehow frustrate it and because in an ordinary superconductor, I think it will be pretty difficult to drive this. This physics. You want to kind of make it more lattice-like physics.
So you would go for some particular.
Want a granular superconductor? You mean a granular superconductor of some type?
Yeah, or a Josephson junction array. So I think actually, so there are some exactly solvable models of superfluids. Where we know how to drive, where this type, well, not exactly solvable models, but models that actually can be simulated with Monte Carlo and that Roger has worked on, where we know actually that such transitions involving proliferation of multiple vortices occur. So those models usually involve some kind of a multi-site exchange term. So somehow, maybe one wants to simulate something like that, but I don't know exactly how to do it.
You need to make the surface kind of dirty.
No, I don't think it's about dirt. I think it's more about some kind of frustration. So somehow you want to make this flux 4 pi vortex. You want to make sure that that's the kind of the lowest energy vortex, that it's somehow favored. I don't have a good feel for what kind of dynamics would do that.
You don't proliferate IE vortices. Instead, you proliferate just the vortices one of them. In that case, you cannot condense it, just proliferate. Then what would you end up with? Is that a normal metal or some crazy?
Yeah, we don't actually know. So there is actually a better answer, which is that if this vortex one, no, if a vortex with vorticity one condenses, so let me denote this as sigma. So this is this Majorana vortex. If it condenses, then of course, if I want to preserve time reversal symmetry, also the vortex with vorticity minus 1 has to condense. But then the fusion has also to condense. But the fusion is 1 plus f. But this is a Kramer's doublet. So you necessarily break time reversal symmetry if you proliferate. You know, even if you actually learn how to proliferate this Majorana mode of vortices, they would necessarily break time reversal symmetry. So we don't really want that. But it's an interesting question: what kind of phase transitions those can be? And we have, I don't know the answer. I'm not sure anyone knows the answer.
How does one get back to the Dirac equation? One could peel the superconductor off, but I mean that's. I don't know
which vortex is a condensing in technical term.
Yeah, so here somehow, I mean, we imagine that these Cooper pairs have formed, and so you have kind of a mean field gap, right? And then on top of that, there are fluctuations due to these vortices. So somehow getting back to the Dirac equation, you know, you have to somehow, you know, this is the wrong, maybe potentially a wrong starting point too. But maybe there is some interesting transition that we're just missing. Yeah, so the Goldstone mode gives this long-range logarithmic interactions between vortices. So I mean, it is of course important throughout the whole story when the vortices proliferate, and so forth. So this XY transition, of course, involves on one side of it you have a superfluid with Goldstone mode, and on the other side you have an insulator. So it's part of the story, but it's kind of a very, very neutral part, if you wish.
So can I ask you a slightly different question? So you focused on topologically what the gap boundary state, but what about the gapless state? I mean, it doesn't have to be trivial, right, in this case. So, like, how much is known? Like, what kind of gapless boundary state are possible at the boundary?
Oh, for a general SPT phase.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in this case, the gapless state is, you know, this Dirac cone state is actually one of the few two-dimensional CFTs that we understand.
Yes. What about others? So, for example, can you have like gapless spinnaker, for example, at the boundary? That's, I'm just throwing away, some arbitrary state that's gapless but not trivial. So,
yeah, I think it's possible. You can just deposit a 2D spinnaker at top of the
just add them up, or?
No, but just glue
a layer. Yeah, I mean, of course, you can, in principle, you can have arbitrary complexity. And you know, this kind of a game, you're just, you know, trying to evade some constraints like gaplessness and symmetry breaking. But in principle, of course, the one can think in a different direction, which is, you know, dynamically, what are the most natural interesting states that can be realized on the surface? That's pretty open, I think.
So I think we should conclude, and let's thank Matt again.